Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the recently quarantined Drea Kaufman.
Hey, I'm not quarantined. I am not contagious. I did not catch anything. I just am not allowed to leave my house right now, according to our governor. Well, we are. It's so weird. Our whole stay-at-home thing is so weird. Like, everything is still open. They just don't want you to go to it. So, not quarantined, just very isolated and very trapped with a 2.5-year-old tyrant. So, everyone send me your well wishes because we all need them to make it through this.
And again, I mean, if you wanted to, you know, like Grubhub, Drea some Rice Krispie treats or cookies or, you know, some sort of snack, you know, I'm sure she'd appreciate it.
Yes. All of that.
Well, we are excited. We're going to be talking about Chapter 24 of The Half-Blood Prince, Sectum Sempra. But before we get into that, just want to remind you, you know, hit us up wherever you are with a star rating review, especially on Apple Podcasts, so people can continue to find the show. You can also find us wherever you get your podcast, though, and make sure you're subscribed because that way you'll get the podcast as soon as it drops. Find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You can also find us on thenerdparty.com where you can go to the contact section and you'll be able to send us an email if you'd like, which is fantastic. So I definitely want to say a huge thank you. We did get an email from a listener, Courtney, and their email was pretty personal, but I did just want to say thank you, Dan, so much for your email. It meant a lot to Drea and I, and we are so glad to be here for all of you during this time. I know it's been a really hard and interesting and frustrating time for all of us, but, you know, this won't matter in the future, but we're just glad to be able to bring a little bit of Harry Potter joy into people's lives because, yeah, you know, Harry Potter is definitely full of hope and joy. And so we're just excited to be a part of helping everybody out right now. So thank you.
I think the one thing we can share about Dan's email before it gets too personal is that he has a really great practice, whether it be Outpost or another Nerd Party podcast or really any podcast, is he listens to a couple episodes while he takes a walk around his neighborhood, gets out, stretches his legs, has that moment of clarity, the moment to kind of reset the day and how you're feeling. And I think that's such a great practice it helps you get out, but, you know, forces you not to just get stuck in your own brain thinking if you're like me, kind of overprocess that thing you said or that email you sent, or that worry starts to grow when you start to kind of like fixate on it. So it's a really great idea to put something in there that you can just listen to and enjoy and digest instead of trying to let that anxiety build up. So I think that's a really great practice that, you know, I thought we should share for everyone. And obviously we'd love it to be Outpost, but there's only so much of us that I can take. So I don't blame anyone.
Well, and there are so many great podcasts out there. And absolutely, I think it is important for us to continue to, you know, be exercising and, you know, taking a walk. You know, you can do that on the sidewalk and stay safe, social distance. But, you know, podcasts are perfect for that. So absolutely, we're excited to be a part of your daily podcast routine. And so thank you so much to all the people that listen. It really does, you know, mean a lot to Drea and I that you guys listen and that, you know, you send us your thoughts. So we really appreciate that. So Drea, you know, this is really interesting because, you know, this chapter follows up right after the last chapter. And, you know, Harry is exhausted, but, you know, very enthused about what has happened. And I love the way that Ron and Hermione respond to this because, you know, as he's telling them in their charms class, you know, he's used the special Philetos charm so that people can't hear them, what they're talking about. But they're just blown away by the information that they're getting, which is huge. But at the same time, Ron is like, man, this is so cool. And you get to go with Dumbledore, like, to destroy a Horcrux? Wow. Like, it's... I love that this is the beginning of this chapter, because it really is kind of a celebration that we have so much news, right? Like, that we have so much for them. They finally have some answers to some questions that we've been asking. So I think that's great.
Yeah, and they get that closure, too, of how he did with Slughorn and what that looked like, too. And I do love that their response is mostly just, wow. That's like 90% of what they say is just, wow. Wow. and it really continues to grow on what we left at the last chapter. Just the gravity of what's going on and what we're faced with is that it leaves Hermione speechless. So,
which is definitely hard to do. So,
right.
I also love during this that... you know, they're supposed to be practicing their charms and Ron's accidentally making it snow and Hermione's like stopping him and like touching him. And Lavender Brown is just shooting daggers out of her eyes at him. And Ron's like, yeah, we split up last night. And yeah, it's nice to be done. Although it was nice that I didn't have to do it. And I love how Hermione calls him a coward.
I do. And I like that it's kind of like in this mocking way, too. Like, she's like, you're a coward. But then she has like this little smirk on her face. You can just be like, you're a coward.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And yeah, they're not the only people that broke up last night.
No. In fact, if you remember the last chapter, when we were talking about the Felix Felicis, right? He thought he sensed some friction between Ginny and Dean, and it turns out they broke up. And I like Hermione's description in that she was like, well, someone asked why they broke up. I don't remember if it was Ron or Harry. And she said, well, it was something about him always helping her through the portrait hole, like she can't do it herself. But I'm pretty sure there was more going on there. I thought very astute, and it's exactly what we saw in the last chapter. So I thought that was a nice, like, kind of like look back on what we just saw and follow up of that thread. It wasn't just a throwaway thing he saw. It was real. He wasn't reading into that. So, and I do love that basically that single action becomes sort of the focus of the rest of his thoughts for the rest of this chapter.
Yeah. I mean, I really do enjoy this whole process. Of Harry just being so elated at the fact that, you know, Ginny has broken up and he, you know, of course he really wants to date her. And I love how Hermione was like, I guess this puts you in a bit of a dilemma. And he's like, he's broken out of his thoughts and like, why? She's like, oh, the Quidditch team, since, you know, Ginny and Dean aren't speaking. He's like, oh yeah. And like, I just love that in his brain, he keeps thinking about like, oh, she broke up, but she's Ron's sister. He's my best mate, but she's Ron's sister. I can make it work, but she's Ron's sister. He'll hit you. She's, you know, like this whole thing is just so funny. And I do love that it's a big deal for Harry. Like he's head over heels for this girl. She just happens to be his best mate's sister. And it's, you know, it's a tough situation to be in because that isn't something that's always going to work out.
Yeah, it's good, though. I mean, I think it's such a healthy thing. I mean, I wish it's a healthy thing, right? It's one of the healthier ways we could be processing this. I mean, the healthiest way would be for him just to sit down with Ron and them to have a conversation about this. But we know that's not going to happen because they're teenage boys and most adults can't process this sort of level of mature conversation, let alone two teenagers. But it's still a relatively healthy way he's talking through this, right? He tries to rationalize it, and then the other part of his brain brings him back. Rationalize, bring him back. And you see that he has so values Ron's relationship, and that's so incredibly important to him, that he's essentially like, there's nothing that's worth it. So I think that's pretty great, right? I do like that he becomes very aware of whether other people know what he's thinking or not. So like Hermione's question, he's like, what do you mean? He almost does like this deer in the headlights look with it, is what I'm imagining. And she's like, well, but now you have to like reform the Quidditch team. And he's like, Oh, okay. Yeah, never mind. Yeah. No, okay. That's so much easier than trying to deal with my unrequited feelings about my best friend's sister.
Yeah. This sounds like a funny movie idea, my best friend's sister. Anyway.
Hogwarts addiction.
Exactly. What's also fascinating in this chapter is that as they're making their way back to the common room, Katie Bell is back. And she's been released from St. Mungo's, and she is doing well. And so they're able to talk to her, and we find out that, if they can beat Ravenclaw by 300 points or more, they can still be in the running for the cup. And so, obviously, Harry's very excited to have Katie Bell back. He and Ron and Hermione are able to ask her about her experience, and what happened. And she's like, I know that you want to know, but I really honestly don't remember. The only thing I remember is that I was walking into the bathroom, and that's about it. And so they don't really get any information there, although this does lead Harry to also think that just because she was going to the ladies' room doesn't mean that it necessarily had to be a lady, because we already know about the Polyjuice potion, as we talked about earlier, and we already know that Crabbe and Goyle have been switching identities. So it could honestly have been anyone, but this does kind of strengthen Harry's thought process that it could have been Malfoy. So
I also reject the idea that it has to be a woman, because there's nothing that says a woman has to be the only person to set foot into the women's room. Like, coming from a Andrea who maybe has had too much fire whiskey and potentially walked into the wrong restroom before, there's nothing that stopped me from entering the men's room. So, I mean, it could have really still been anybody, especially if it's a man who doesn't want you to know that it's a man, right? Yeah. Way to throw him off the scent. So I did not like that part of rationalization. It was very narrow in terms of its like scope. And I feel like it was one of those things where like, I don't know if she's just trying to throw us off the scent, or the Rowling, if she's trying to throw us off the scent or what, but it kind of felt like something that didn't need to be said. It could have gone without saying, but That was just me. It was like this one little thing that just like irked me, because I think that's like the second or third time they've sort of said this. And it's like, no, it doesn't have to be a woman. Let's move on.
Yeah, I got the feeling that, for this part, that it is really about the fact that this is probably... it's making it harder for Harry, like, to make his case to, like, Hermione specifically,
that she's trying to use that.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
I get that, but I still don't think it does that. Like, maybe you'd have to tie it back and be like, well, I don't really think Malfoy would go into the women's room. And then, I don't know. I mean, I think at this point it doesn't matter. I think they've kind of lost the ability to influence Harry into thinking it's not Malfoy or he has nothing to do with this, right? Like, they should just stop trying, because it's not going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. This is also an interesting thing, too, because Harry's also trying to find a way to figure out the information that he wants. And he says, well, maybe I'll use my Felix Felicis so I can get into the room requirement. And Hermione's like, that is a complete and utter waste of this potion. Because that's not really how the potion works. you know, you, and so she kind of explains her reasoning of why she thinks, you know, he was able to get everything taken care of the last time, and how he kind of already had everything he needed. This just kind of makes all the situations right, and how that's not what's really going on with the room of requirement. And so Harry's like, well, maybe we could make more. So they look it up in his copy of Advanced Potion Making, and they find out that this is one of the most complicated potions, and that it takes about 6 months because you got to let it stew. So that's not going to work. And this is a moment which is really interesting, is that Harry is flipping through the book again, and he sees this spell, Sectum Sempra, for enemies. And it kind of puts it in his brain, which is something that's going to be really important for the rest of the chapter. But before we get there, we have Quidditch practice, and it is going swimmingly. Like, it could not be going better. Harry is so excited. The team really seems to be working well together. Ron is on top of his game. They are having fun. Him and Ginny are laughing a lot together, which of course makes Harry very happy. And yeah, things are going very well. And so I think, this is one of those places where, you know, Harry is just, he's very excited right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, everyone seems to be at the better version of themselves than they were three chapters ago. Ron's not with Lavender anymore, and that's kind of a relief off his chest. You know, Ginny's not with Dean anymore. Harry seems to be enlightened by being able to get this thing out of Slughorn, and the fact that his close friends are all up. Everyone's happy that McLagan is gone. So, you know, everyone seems to be glad that he's not around anymore. So I think it's just one of those times where, like, it's where all the stars align and everything seems really happy. Which, as anyone knows, is when you should be on the lookout for something to go horribly wrong, which is exactly what proceeds to happen.
Yeah. And this is really interesting because, you know, Harry checks the map as he usually does just to see where things are, you know, going, and how things are going with Malfoy. And, you know, he doesn't find Malfoy up near the room requirement. He actually finds him downstairs in a bathroom, and he goes down there and he finds Malfoy talking to Moaning Myrtle, or Moaning Myrtle talking to him. She's trying to get Malfoy to tell her his problems. And he's just saying how he's so worried and frustrated, and it's not working. He can't make it work. And if he doesn't, he's going to kill me. And he sees Harry in the reflection in the mirror, and then they start fighting. It turns into a duel.
I find it so interesting. I feel like, and maybe correct me one way or the other, or someone reach out and correct me later, that I feel like he has been found in that bathroom before. Like, I know the trio has used that bathroom for stuff before, but I feel like we have seen Malfoy in that room with Moaning Myrtle before. And maybe I'm wrong, but it felt familiar when we found him there. Like, I wasn't surprised to find him there, and not just because I've seen the movie so many times that I knew he was there, mm-hmm. but, like, it felt like that wasn't new information for me in the book. I've done my best to actually not watch any of the movies while reading the books, just because I feel like that muddles things. But that's kind of, for me, a piece of it. But we had this point where I think that going to the movie, it does actually do a pretty good job of depicting the scene pretty accurately, straight down to how tightly gripped on the sink Malfoy has it. You can see those, she calls them the white knuckles, the bone white knuckles, because he's gripping so hard. And you can see that distraught, that visible gaunt and distraught that he feels. It feels real bad. And what's interesting here is what happens in this duel that they have, because it starts out, first of all, nobody says anything to anybody. So all of a sudden we go from 0 to 60. But we also go straight it's an intense one too. It's not like a duel you'd expect two teenagers to have. This is like two people who brought guns to a gang war. Like this is, we go straight to serious, you know, Malfoy gets interrupted trying to cast an unforgivable curse, right? Like, whoa.
Yeah, you know, I think the reason it feels familiar is that earlier Moaning Myrtle mentions when she runs into Harry and Ron that there was a boy there talking to her. So this makes sense when we find him here.
I can see that.
Yeah, and that's one of those, like, she just throws those things in there that kind of feel like a throwaway at the beginning, but then, you know, it's just so great. I love it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is an all-out brawl, but with wands. And they are going for the kill. Obviously, Malfoy is. And so Harry responds with this spell that he doesn't know what it does. And it is a completely shocking moment when, from Malfoy's face all the way down through his chest, that there just starts to be blood pouring. And it freaks, you know, Harry out, of course, and he's trying to stop the blood. And then Moaning Myrtle is, you know, screaming, murderer, murderer, you know, like, and Snape comes in, and thankfully, at least, Snape is able to stop the bleeding. And then he's going to take Malfoy up to the infirmary, and he tells Harry, don't move. And I love the way that she describes it, that Harry would not even have thought about moving at this point.
That he didn't even think, he didn't even consider disobeying Snape's order. And I think this is one of those situations where I would love to see where had the follow-up to this, because in the book you don't get any. There's zero consequences for this scene in the book, right? It's almost like it's swept under the rug and no one wants to talk about it and it's over, right? I think what's interesting here is that there, first of all, there are consequences, and second of all, not only are there actual sort of like punishment consequences for Harry, but we get to see the impact of this has on Harry, because shortly after this, and he goes back to the common room after being kind of ripped a new one by Snape and then ripped a new one by McGonagall, and he, you know, is being ripped a new one by Hermione, and he says something like, I would never do that to, well, I would never do that to anybody. Like, I cannot believe that that's what that did. Like, there was this immediate like regret, and he's like, bring on the punishment. I totally deserve it. Right? Like, he owned what he did and knew exactly how terrible it was and was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be responsible for doing that to anybody again. Like, Malfoy did not deserve that, right? Even if he was trying to kill me, like, I could have done something else. I could have had a different choice. And the fact that he like kind of approaches this from the standpoint of I could have a different choice is definitely what sets him apart from everyone else on the opposite side. And getting that kind of spelled out in the rest of this chapter, which is completely absent from the movie, it's just very clearly painting that whole love is the stronger way to go. And it really paints the sympathy and the humanity that Harry has, even for what he kind of determines his worst enemy, right? Malfoy. Malfoy's probably not the worst of all of them, but he's one of those terrible enemies he has that he's had since the beginning of the series. So I think that that is such an important part of this chapter. And it was so, it's a terrible thing that happened and it's such a downer, but the fact of how he processes it and owns it and knows what he did was wrong is so important and so sort of inspiring, because that's a hard thing to do. It's a really hard thing to do, is own that mistake and decide you're going to learn from it and not try to justify it away like Ginny did for him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that's really fascinating here is that, you know, when Snape comes back, he's like, bring me your school bag and bring me all of your books. And so Harry runs upstairs, he gets his books, and then he's like, Ron, I need your book right now. I need your copy of Advanced Potion Making right now. He's like, he's like, I'll explain later. And so he runs by the room of requirement and he's like, I need a place to hide my book. And he finds himself in a cathedral-sized room with high windows and like it described as the room that generations of Hogwarts inhabitants have hidden things. So it's an insane amount of space and insane amount of stuff. And Harry runs around trying to find a right place to find hide this. And he finds this like this old nappy cupboard that looks like somebody spilled boiling pus on, he says. And he throws it into a cage with something that's been dead that has five legs, which is really weird. And then he's like, how in the world am I going to find this again? So he finds a ugly old warlock that's like on this crate and he perches that in front of this cabinet and he puts a wig on it and a tarnished tiara on the statue's head to make it more distinctive. And then he goes back to Snape. Everything I just said is about to be super important in the next book, but I'm not going to point out exactly what it is.
Well, and we were talking about this offline before we started recording because we had a whole conversation about everything going on and blah, blah, blah. And oh, I reorganized yada, my yada, office. Yada. Oh, I started working on Legos. Oh, right. Yeah. you just got our whole life story right there. But we were talking about how this is one of those instances where the movie really doesn't do justice. Nope. And that there's a scene that happens here in this section that actually happens much later in the chapter and in a much more organic and sort of impactful way. So in the movie, Ginny takes him to the room and they kind of calmly wander through in this sort of like eerily romantic way and they hide the book together and then she kisses him and like disappears, right? That definitely doesn't happen in the book. It doesn't happen that way. This is definitely more of a panicked Harry having to act on his feet. He has to hide it. He has to go. There's this like sense of urgency. It gave me anxiety. I mean, it was like two pages of this book that I didn't want to read because there's enough anxiety right now. But that's definitely the feeling you get from this. And it feels more like what would actually be happening here. So I thought that was an interesting call out and something I had completely forgotten and made this chapter that much richer for me. So I really enjoy that. And I appreciate you for calling that out earlier as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that's so interesting because once she gets back to Snape, Snape's like, is this everything or is this your book? And then he's like, why does it say Ronald Waslibs or whatever? I can't even. And he's like, oh, that's my nickname. Oh, really? That's your nickname, huh? And Harry's trying to like close his mind. He doesn't want Snape reading his mind that this isn't his book. And so he gives him detention. And not only does he give him detention, but he gives him detention every Saturday until the end of the term, which means Harry is going to miss Quidditch. And Harry is feeling worse and worse and worse. And Hermione just will not let up about it. And she just jumps all over him about how she was right the whole time and that, you know, she, and, you know, as Hermione kind of finishes for a little bit, Harry, honestly gets it from, sadly McGonagall, who tells him that Snape's punishment is exactly what he deserves. And, you know, he could have been expelled. Then, Hermione starts in again about the prince and how, he shouldn't have been using the book She says, I was right all along. And Harry's like, no, I don't think you were. And this is a very fascinating argument to me between them because I don't think Harry's wrong. I don't think that Hermione is trying to say that the prince is dangerous just because there's one spell written in the margins, which Harry rightly points out. It doesn't say use me or this is the best spell ever. It's just a spell written in the margins. And he's like, I don't know what their frame of mind was writing that, but, you know, I'm going to go get my book. And I I just think this argument between them is fascinating because I get where Hermione is coming from, but I think Hermione is way overstating her case.
I don't think that, I don't disagree with you, but I also don't think that either side is necessarily wrong. I think this is one of those instances where they're not really arguing the same case. So for example, like, I don't think Hermione's arguing that the prince is a bad person. I think she's just arguing that there's an unknown risk associated with this and that Harry isn't taking that risk seriously. You know, there's a part of her arguments too that are a little based in selfishness. She throws a little quip in there about how it's made you this like potion superstar, right? But I think what she's actually trying to communicate is that there's just a lot of risk with messing around with changing potions and changing spells and casting new spells that you don't understand. And I think that Harry is not necessarily acknowledging that that risk exists and that he wants to take it. He's just taking it. And so she keeps trying to warn him of the risk. And he is in his own mind or his own processing, like, I'm willing to take that risk because the benefit outweighs the cost. So I feel like they're not arguing opposite sides of something. So they're both right and they're both wrong at the same time. You know, Harry's wrong in that he probably shouldn't have tested that out in that setting, right? And he'll own that, and that he needs to be maybe more careful with what he learns and how he applies it from that book. But at the same time, you know, Hermione's wrong in that she keeps telling him not to use it, but there could be positive benefits out of that, and it could outweigh the cost that it costs you. So I think it's one of those two-sided things that no one's going to ever convince the other one that they're right, because there's not a one right answer here. But I also feel a little bit like this maybe scared Harry into being more careful with it, which is kind of what Hermione's been asking him to do all along. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it applies in the future. He doesn't even have the book right now. It's not in his possession. He can't use it right now.
Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting. And I think one of the most interesting things about this is that as they're arguing, apparently Ginny's been kind of sitting there the whole time, and she finally just tells Hermione to give it a rest. Like, she yells at him, and she's like, Malfoy apparently was trying to use an unforgivable curse, and Harry should have used anything he had up his sleeve. And Hermione's, well, of course I'm glad that, you know, Harry wasn't cursed. And she tries to start to reason with Ginny, like, well, aren't you mad that, you know, he's not going to be there for Quidditch? And then best line of this whole chapter is Ginny like, oh, don't start acting like you understand Quidditch, snapped Ginny. You'll embarrass yourself. And it's kind of fascinating to see these two go at it, because even Harry and Ron are kind of like looking at each other like, what just happened? Because these two have always been really friendly, but I think there's a moment here where Ginny understands a part of Harry that Hermione can never understand. And I think that's really interesting, because they're very similar in some ways, her and Harry. Like, they both seem to be people who are just a little bit more adventurous. You know, they're willing to take some risks that other people might not willing to take. And it's interesting because I detect here a little bit of protectionism from Ginny's perspective on protecting Harry, because she feels like he's being attacked. And I think that's pretty interesting for this part of this chapter.
Now, I don't recall in this chapter if we get sort of a counter response from Hermione as to this sort of almost aggression that Ginny throws out there. But I also sort of get, along with all of that, I get this idea that, or this impression that there is something between Hermione and Ginny that the boys don't know. And I don't mean like a feud or a cat fight. I get the impression that like they know more about things than maybe Ron and Harry have been brought into the fold about, right? Like, or I'm going to spoil the rest of the chapter here. But I have a feeling that Hermione knows that Ginny likes Harry. Right? I get the feeling that she knows that. So when she snaps at Hermione, Hermione knows it's not about her. Right? She knows where it's coming from. She understands the thought process. You know what I mean? She gets the background on it more than Harry and Ron do. Because let's face it, Ron's just totally oblivious to most things. And of course they wouldn't tell Harry, right? But I get the impression that they're that this sort of like snap is because they're close and not because there's tension there, right? Because it's just so small and it finally gets to the point where like she has to kind of snap back. So I kind of feel like that's the way I was taking it, because Hermione doesn't sort of have a real strong reaction back. She sort of just like, at that point, she doesn't even like lick her tail and walk away. She just sort of like steps back and is like, all right, I pushed too far. Right. Which is either very, very mature of Hermione, or she knows there's something else. There's another reason for this overprotectionism, like what you're talking about, to be coming from Ginny. And I think it's the latter, to be honest.
I can see that. I think there's definitely a part of it where here the person that Ginny likes is being attacked and she's kind of tired of it. I would say there is another side here, but I do think that Ginny just kind of rightly puts Hermione in her place, though, because I think Hermione has made her point. And I think that Hermione is kind of just, she's going a little bit farther than she needs to go right now. And I think part of that is just Hermione's desire to be right. You know, like Hermione likes to be right. And so, and she likes to be told that she's right.
She likes to have others. She likes to bring others along in her rightness. Like she likes to be able to persuade others to agree.
Yes.
And not getting that. She'll keep beating that and keep doing that and keep, she'll keep saying the same thing over again and trying to teach you the same lesson and trying to drive the same point home until she wins you over. So I can totally see what you're saying there too. And it's maybe a combination of the two, right? It's a little bit of A and a little bit of B, and you know, it's a little bit Hermione doesn't take it personally because she knows where Ginny's coming from, and Ginny's just sick of Hermione always trying to be right and kind of snaps a little bit, especially feeling a little emboldened after breaking up with Dean.
Yeah. I'm
trying to remember his name.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately for Harry, everything's pretty short-lived with this joy of being defended by Ginny, because he has detention on Saturday and Snape gives him detention to work through all of these punishment files, and he chooses a year in which he's going to see a lot of punishment files for people that he knows, like Sirius and James. So it's not obviously the worst punishment, because they're points of him getting to read about his father, but it's definitely boring, and he's completely missing the game, and he has no idea what's happening, and he's finally able to leave his detention, and by the time he gets to the common room, he's like, what is going on in there? And the portrait's like, just wait. So they get in there.
Before we get in there, I do want to say one note that I really appreciate on this sort of punishment, that he, even though Snape's taking jabs at him and he's being forced to read all the stuff his dad and Sirius did, which is opening wounds and frustrating him and all, like, he just bites his tongue and he takes it. Right. Whereas if you look at a couple books ago with Umbridge, he didn't just take it quietly and fight it. Right. Like here, he knows he's being punished for the right reason. And even if this is an extreme punishment, he almost doesn't care because he knows he deserves something.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it's important to point out that sort of difference of him being able to bite his tongue and hold his temper and him not having been able to do that in the past, because that's a real accomplishment to be able to do that. Even if you know you deserve it, it's still making him angry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that during this punishment phase, these couple of pages where we have to read about what's happening with him and Snape, he has grown a lot. It's kind of shown in these couple of pages.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. Because absolutely, I think there may have been cases beforehand where, you know, Harry might have been I think in an earlier book, Harry might have been a little bit jerky about this. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I do think he realizes that he did do something wrong, which, and you saying that goes all the way back to the fact that Harry said, you know, if I knew what this spell did, I would not have used it.
Right. And I think, you know, he has a very justifiable out, right? Like Ginny showed it to us. He was trying to kill Harry. Like, he was trying to kill him. He was trying to torture him and make him go insane. Like, that was what he was trying to do to him. So he was very justified in the extreme reaction he had. And he could be screaming that from the rooftops. He could be fighting this. He could be arguing all of that. But he's not. Right? He's not doing that. He's not. So, you know, all of that is happening. And he very much so could take the path of not owning it and trying to sort of shove it off, but you know, instead he bows out of his Quidditch game and doesn't try to get Malfoy in trouble, conversely, and doesn't try to fight this, and just goes through it. And then, like you were saying, he ventures back to the common room he misses lunch, right? That's the whole reason his punishment ends, is because his stomach growls and Snape realizes what time it is. And he heads back to the common room, where the portrait lady kind of lets him in with sort of an ominous message.
Yeah. And I think that it's pretty awesome that he gets into the common room and they won the game. They beat Ravenclaw by like 400 points, 450 points. And to 140. So they won. They did what they needed to do. And Harry looks around and Ginny is running towards him. And before he can even think about it, before he can do anything, she's in his arms and they're kissing. And it's just like, yes. It is one of the best moments of the series because it's finally happened. And I just love it because Harry, his thought process is he doesn't know whether it's been half an hour or like 5 minutes. He doesn't know how long the time has been. Everybody's like staring and wolf whistling and like,
hold on. The way she phrases it, it may have been after several long moments, it may have been half an hour or possibly several sunlit days. It's like, ugh. So cute.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So, you know, I think that the beauty of it is Ron's reaction, because I love Ron. He just looks over at them and he's like, well, if you must. Like,
it's just, yeah, there's this look of like, fine. Like, there's this like begrudging acceptance of it. Which again speaks so volumes to their relationship, right? Like that.
Well,
was
how
the
much
thing...
they've both grown as characters.
Yes, I love it. I love it. It's too. If he'd had any more supportive of a reaction, I wouldn't have bought it. It wouldn't have been true to character. I would have been looking through it and going, "What are we gonna get through this bullshit?" But they instead, you know, he sort of has this like. And I think part of that happens because he gets to see it happen.
Yeah.
Right? He gets to see the Ginny's a willing participant. He gets to see how happy they both are. He's been watching them be happy. He knows Harry has the best of intentions. And I think also, as we compared it to the when we talked earlier about the movie, I think that helps with the character of Ron and understanding and accepting what's happening, versus in the movie where it's this like weird secret that they keep from him for a while, which doesn't really fit their character or their relationships. And it's a weird dynamic that gets created that doesn't have to get created. So, I think it's really sweet. I also love that and the reason I thought maybe Hermione knew is she's just beaming. She's described as just so beaming for them and how happy they are, which tells me she knew. She knew both sides. She knew they both liked each other. And that's just so stinking cute too. So I love that he just sort of gestures and they walk out the portrait hall and they go take a stroll. And that's just so cute.
Yeah. My favorite part is that, his thought was, we'll take a long walk and maybe we'll talk about the match if we have time.
Like, well, and I love as this is happening too, we look for Ron's reaction, we get Hermione's reaction. We also see Dean Thomas like shatter a glass because he's so angry, and they're talking about they're planning a mutiny against him.
And Romilda Vale.
Yes. Looks like she wants to throw up.
Yes. Oh, it's so great. It's so great.
Awesome. Oh. I know. Oh, it's just so funny. I just love like that it happens, and I love that neither of them planned it, and it just sort of spur of the moment. They're like, oh, what do we do now? Okay, well, let's just go be happy. Bye.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I love so much about this is that, you know, we've known for a long time that as Ginny was growing up, you know, as being younger, she had a huge crush on Harry, but she ended up becoming her own woman in many ways and not waiting around for Harry to make a move. And I think what's so kind of beautiful about this whole thing is that they just kind of find their way towards each other. Like it all, he didn't even need the Felix Felicis, you know, it all worked out the way it should. And, you know, Ron's reaction, I think, is I always read into it a little bit because my sister's married to my best friend. And I think in many ways, Ron's thinking to himself, I mean, like if she's going to be with anybody, you know, she might as well be with Harry, somebody I trust, you know, because he's always, even though he hasn't always handled it right, he has always been very protective of his sister because he loves her. And so I think there's that thought process going on in his brain where he's like, well, if you must, you know, like, okay, you know. So it's really, I think the way she writes it, it just all really makes sense for these characters. Yeah.
Well, and I think what's interesting too, and maybe from the brother standpoint, you can weigh in, but I think all of the boyfriends, and I don't mean all, like, oh my God, there were so many of them, but this is not her first boyfriend. This is not the first time she's been her own woman and the first time Ron's been faced with it, right? So I think he sort of got those like knee-jerk reactions and terrible feelings about it out of the way already. And he's like, okay, you know what? I didn't like any of those other guys. I like this guy clearly. He's my best friend. You know, I think there's a little bit that just made it more comfortable. You know, like he got to ease into it. It wasn't like Harry was, as soon as Ginny was old enough, Harry's like, hey man, I want to date your sister. So I think that helped. I think just like it was good timing and it all worked out. You mentioned the Felix Felicis, which sort of made me think and pull a little bit of a comparison here. No one said anything about this, partially because they don't have the same insight that we do as readers or Harry did as the viewer in the Pensieve. But I do think it's important to note the difference between Harry and Ginny and Tom Riddle's mom and Tom Riddle Sr., right? She cast love spells. She used trickery to get him to fall in love with her. And I'm going to put that in loose quotes, to have this baby, to develop this relationship. And then she tried to ease him out of that and hope he truly felt that way.
Right.
And if Harry had gone the same route and used the Felix Felicis or used luck to luck into this relationship, there would always sort of be that lingering question of, was it luck or was it real? And will it stay around? Will it be real after the luck wears off? And so I think it's interesting that to point out that the difference of a relationship established under magic and a relationship kind of organically growing on its own. And you kind of get both sides, right? So we've seen the terrible one and now we get to see the real organic one blossoming, because this is probably one of the first real love stories we've had so far.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I like the way that you put that, this idea that, you know, because neither of them tried to force the issue, this has happened in a way that where they're both ready, right? They're both ready to be in this relationship with one another. And, you know, I think it's helped because, you know, because Ginny has dated other people, Harry has been able to see her as beyond, like, obviously Ron's little sister. She's become a woman to him. And you know, what's funny is that Ginny actually has more dating experience than Harry, because well, we know how it went with Cho. But I think the thing that makes this so great is that fight that that fight, quote unquote, that Ginny and Hermione had earlier, like, we can see so much how well Ginny fits with who Harry is. You know, like, they're going to make a great couple. And I think that's what makes it really a beautiful thing. Like, you're like, yes, finally, these kids are, they're going to make it.
Well, and we don't even talk about it here, really. I don't think we talk about it in the next chapter, but we also forget when we talk about Ginny being her own person, part of what I think that's so appealing to Harry. And I think she's so naturally talented and confident in herself. And that's just highly attractive to him because she had to have caught the snitch to end the game. And so she's clearly a very talented seeker. And so I think that, I mean, we already knew she was pretty talented at Quidditch, but only to get the confirmation that she's almost more talented, or at least as talented as Harry at Quidditch. You know, there's just so much we kind of subtly learn about Ginny in this chapter and in this like last part of the chapter, that I'm really excited. It warms my heart. I think they're so good together, and that's what you need is that balance, yeah, and the support. You need to be enough alike, but enough different. And, you know, and it makes me so excited that it's a member of the Weasley family, because we love that family so much.
Yep.
At least like 9 out of 10 of them, or however many. I can't do that.
At least right now.
Off the top of my head. At least right now. So I do really love this. And I love how this chapter kind of just ends with them almost essentially riding off into the sunset. I can't wait to pick up the lake. I can't wait to see what happens in the next chapter, where we pick up with their relationship having to become a relationship now.
Ginny is one of my absolute favorite characters in the series. Ginny, and I think part of that is because Ginny is the one I'm most attracted to her personality as a character. Like, she's one of those characters you're like, oh, if I could marry a character, it would be them, you know? So Ginny is that character for me, and absolutely adore her and Harry together. I think it's great writing, you know? It's great writing. And having seen that kind of relationship play out in my own life with my brother-in-law and sister, you know, it's even more special because I've like actually seen this actually happen in real life. So it's
you got to be Ron in the real world.
Pretty much. Hopefully I'm not quite as dunce.
You got to be Ron in this situation.
Yeah.
Come on.
I can't wait for us to get to the rest of the chapters here. You know, we are at chapter 25 next week, Drea, which is really cool because there are 30 chapters left. There are 30 chapters in this book. So we are getting so close to the end. And of course, starting the Deathly Hallows right after that. So stick with us. But hey, if anybody wants to catch up to you and send maybe their favorite coronavirus memes or something, where can they find you?
Sure. If you want to send me your ridiculous memes or the recipe you've been doing, because Lord knows I need help, or you want to send me Rice Krispie treats, or you just want to chat, you can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman and on Twitter at PCFChick.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero under the name MattRushing02. You can find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. And then I'm over on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One's called The Orb with Chris Jones as we're talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do our general geek show, the 602 Club, where we're just talking about all of the fandoms that we love. So you can check that out. It's a lot of fun. And then last but not least, doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.